This is episode 26 of the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. In this episode, I bring you a powerful conversation with Daniel Mangera. Daniel is a coach. He's also a best-selling author, and he is a very wise and very versed student of Dr. Joe Dispenza. Daniel's going to bring this podcast, the Upgraded Life Podcast, one of the very best concept breakdowns for mindset and what you can do to upgrade your mindset. So you're not going to want to miss that. And it's going to be at the end of the episode. So buckle in, because we're going on a real wild ride with Daniel Mangera. Hello, thanks for tuning into the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission. Your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the upgraded life. All right, I am here with Daniel Mangera, and I'm excited for this interview. This is, again, one of these things where we meet online. He sees what I'm doing in social media. I see what he's doing. And it's like, hey, I think you have some similarities, some overlap. And so we'll see how that plays out in this conversation. You know, about Daniel, he is a best-selling author. So hopefully he's going to tell us a little bit about his book and kind of how that process came to be. And just really helping people with their intention and their belief systems is what I'm hoping to hear more from Daniel, and how he learned about that and what that actually looks like. And I don't know, I'm just excited. It sounds like you've really taken the effort to, you know, self-learn and embrace this concept of examining every areas of your life and also investing in yourself. Meaning, if there's something specific in your life that you need to improve upon, you might as well go to an expert, right? You might as well see yourself as worthy of being in investing in yourself, which for a lot of people, that's a huge hurdle there. So Daniel, welcome to the show. I'm super excited that you're here. We're both actually in the same time zone, which it doesn't always happen in these as well. So there's a lot of things that are going well for us so far. So I'm going to throw it over to you, Daniel. Introduce yourself to me and my listeners, and tell us what you're doing, what you're about, and what you're most excited about these days.
Well, first of all, Dr. Nick, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and to the guys listening to the podcast. It's always an honor to be able to connect with people and to allow my experiences to be a light for them to perhaps have more abundant, joyful, purpose-driven lives. That's what I'm all about. So I'm Daniel Mangera. I'm 36 years old. I spent the last 20 years in personal development. However, I would say roughly 16 of those years were spent in selfish personal development, just for the purpose of being the greatest version of myself. That's what I strove to do. I was diagnosed with Asperger's at the age of 27, so just under 10 years ago. And up until that time, I'd spent a lot of time with social anxiety, general anxiety, resulting from being undiagnosed as being on the autistic spectrum and navigating a mainstream neurotypical world. And a lot of the way that I've looked at life and the way that I've looked at my challenges and looked at what I want from life has resulted, I would say, from that interesting thing of being autistic in a neurotypical world and not knowing why I was so weird. But because I've been really fortunate in the mix of gifts versus, I would say, challenges faced, it wasn't apparent that there was something deeply going on, and I was allowed to get away with a lot. But over the last, I'd say, 3 or 4 years, I've spent a lot of time dedicating to supporting other people, to empowering people. My slogan is Dream With Your Eyes Open. And what that's all about is referring to my belief that everybody has something beautiful to offer to the world. I believe we have a universal tapestry within which we all have a thread that we are. And sometimes that appears to be something big and grand, and sometimes something run-of-the-mill and mundane, but all of it's beautiful and special. And the ability to step into that and to access the fulfillment and the beauty that results from playing our position, for want of a better phrase, can only happen if we choose it. And the model I created, Beyond Intention, is about empowering people to be able to make the choices that align us with having an abundant, joyful, purpose-driven life that's reflected by living that dream.
Awesome. Thanks for giving us a glimpse into who you are and your backstory. So I am trained as a therapist. I have a PhD in counseling. So it's going to be hard for me to move past this diagnosis experience that you have there. So about 10 years ago, you received the diagnosis of Asperger. Walk me through that. Like, how did that come about?
It's really interesting. You know, I suffered from insomnia from as early as I can remember. I remember specifically around the age of like 12 or 13, just starting to notice that a couple of times a year, I'd have periods of time when I just couldn't sleep. Mm-hmm. There was nothing necessarily wrong happening. I just couldn't sleep. And I'd create agreements within myself to support being able to step into space of sleep, where whether it's, you know, if I count sheep for this many days, then it will end. And I formed patterns that allowed me to sort of break the cycles of non-sleep. I also had really big difficulties holding circles of friends. I was completely awkward when it came to women. It was a very, very interesting sort of combination of things. And then around the age, I think it was about 26 or 27, and right thereabouts, I had one of the worst spates of insomnia that I'd ever experienced. And it was about 2 weeks. And I went to see the doctor because I said, you know, I had stuff that I had to take care of in life at the time. And by then, I'd become quite rehearsed in managing insomnia, as in the cost of it wasn't so apparent for me. I could manage, you know, I was a functioning insomniac. But this time, it wasn't really working. I was, you know, I was slurring. I couldn't really do anything. So what I ended up doing was going to see the doctor, and the doctor said, you know, here's something called Zopiclone, and Zopiclone is a very strong sleep med. Because of the strength of it and the fact that it's quite addictive, he said, I can only give you three. The maximum you can take is two at one time. So I took one, still wide awake, took another half, I was wide awake, took the other half, taken two, I was still wide awake. And this is, you know, the strongest pain sleeping pill that he could prescribe. So I came back and said, doctor, you know, sleeping pill didn't work, what are we gonna do? He said, well, sorry, buddy, if that didn't work, then there's something else going on, you're going to need to talk to somebody. And I said, okay. So he packed me off to go and speak to a therapist. And it just so happened, the gods were good. The therapist that he packed me off to specialized in working with adults on the autistic spectrum, and specialized as a cognitive behavioral therapist supporting people in that. And so Dr. Helen, God bless her, she didn't tell me what was up. She kind of just said, you know, I've got some tests for you to do. Let's take care of this, let's take care of that. And we worked together for a little while. And then she gave me her diagnosis and gave me a specific test to check where I was on the spectrum. And yeah, I was definitely on the autistic spectrum. And what she ascertained was that the reason why I was having insomnia is because I was suffering from a lot of anxiety, general and social, and that was reflecting in me not being able to sleep from time to time. When that built up enough, it blocked my sleep. And then the coping mechanism that I kind of fumbled my way through allowed me to create some space to sleep.
So talk about that. What was the mechanism that helped you?
First of all, it was addressing that what my gifts were was the main thing that we did first. We addressed what my gifts were, because obviously understanding that I'm on the spectrum, knowing that there's going to be certain things that my brain can do better. And one of the things I came to understand is that anything systemized, I can pretty much pick it up. And so I studied social dynamics, and studying social dynamics gave me frameworks to understand human interaction. And then what I came to understand is that my general anxiety was coming from the fact that my autistic brain needed systems in order to function. So when there was no system or I didn't understand what was going on, my brain would have meltdown, I'd have panic attacks and so on and so forth. And so what I ended up just doing was focusing on identifying what in my life I could systemize, or at least use systemized ways of learning to cope or deal with it. and understanding that where I have limits, it's okay, and to be gentle with myself about those limits, and just to seek the appropriate support where I could to make sure that I had those little bumps when things came a bit on top.
Gotcha. Yeah, I love that description of needing systems and recognizing systems and seeing the patterns there. That makes a lot of sense to me there. So I'm just curious, though, any more medication through that process, or was this kind of...
I haven't needed it. Since then, I do get trickles of insomnia from time to time. But generally speaking, I'm able to navigate that by just understanding, oh, there must be something in my life now that I don't feel okay with.
Yeah.
And either coming to terms with the fact that it's something I can't tackle mm-hmm. and going to get the appropriate support, or working through it and seeing if I can at least manage it to the mm-hmm. place where I can be in a conducive space to actually get some sleep.
Yeah. So you're able to see, you quote unquote, symptoms as your body, mind, soul, and spirit telling you that something's off. Right.
And that's it.
And so instead of suppressing it or, you know, drowning it out, you've learned to sift through it and see what is out of balance or what needs some different attention. So I love that. I love that approach for sure. I think sometimes people will see those. Oh,
sorry, just one sec. My mic's going to die. I need to plug it in.
No worries.
I forgot I've been using it all day. sorry. Hopefully you can cut that a little bit.
No worries.
Sorry, I don't want it to cut out. Brilliant. Okay, good.
You good? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people will experience a symptom, whether it's anxiety, insomnia, depression, and you know, the go-to is just to get rid of it. You know, mm-hmm. whatever it is, just get rid of it, fix it. Well, as opposed to stepping back and seeing it, you know, as a red flag or a warning sign that, hey, there's something else in my life that maybe I need to look at differently or have a different approach or see the pattern in there, the system that's involved in there. So like I said, speaking, you know, my language in terms of the way that I like to work with people as well, you know, before we look at masking or suppressing or just flat out ignoring, let's see this as, hey, you know, my mind, my body, and my spirit's trying to tell me something. What is that message?
I mean, I feel the same way about pain as well. Mm-hmm. You know, pain, if you look at childbirth, one of the most painful things that a human can experience, and actually it symbols the new birth, it signals life. If we look at the body, we have growing pains because it's a signal that something's shifting mm-hmm. or needs to shift. And once we start to see pain as a signal versus an enemy, it allows us to start embodying that opportunity to step into something new, to make a shift, to stop and pause. So I think it's similar to the way that you look at these things too.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me the title of your book again.
Stepping Beyond Intention.
Yeah. So that symbolism about beyond intention in the phrasing there, how did you come up with that? What does that mean to you, beyond intention?
So my model Beyond Intention actually came off the back of, I don't want to call it suicidal depression because it wasn't an ongoing thing. I kind of just dropped to a point where I was like, okay, there's no point. Everything had kind of imploded in my life at the time. I was like, okay, well, the world's going to be better off if I'm not around. I was very focused. There was no like deep, sad sopping into it. It felt like a very logical decision. Mm-hmm. And the only reason why I didn't follow through was because I didn't know how to effectively execute the act of suicide. And I didn't want to fail at something else mm-hmm. or, you know, get rescued in the middle of trying to take my own life and then be, you know, he tried and he failed at something else and blah, blah, blah. So the only reason why I didn't is because I overanalyzed myself out of it on the basis of the fact that I didn't know how to properly execute. And so what happened was I came to a place where I said, okay, I'm very focused now on coming up with an effective way to commit suicide. But the sideline thought that happened alongside that was, I'm the only one that can make sure I get this done properly. And over time, my obsession became more understanding why the work that I've been doing for the best part of 8 years up until that point had suddenly stopped working. And I became obsessed with this idea that there's a common thread between all of these experiences, what I'm trying to run away from, what I'm trying to do, and that was me. And that idea, the common denominator, became the foundation theory to Beyond Intention, and step one of that, which is accept. And over the next sort of 10 or 11 years, the model refined and grew and became a lot more tight. So it really tightened up about 4 or 5 years ago when I came upon Dr. Joe Dispenza's work. Mm-hmm. That's when the final pieces really clicked into place. But what I really understood was that I was operating on programs that weren't benefiting me. And intention disrupts that program, but I had no intention of having to consistently keep disrupting that program. So I wanted to get beyond the space where I need to keep disrupting the program. And my inner mind, my energy field, my emotions, my unconscious programs were supporting the outcomes that I set. So instead of having to keep, you know, coming course correcting, I said, no, I'm on course. I choose another course, but once I choose that course, I stick on it versus needing to keep disrupting it with intention. So Beyond Intention is about getting to that realm beyond the need to keep setting intentions. But in order to get beyond it, we have to master it. And so mastering intention setting and how to effectively bring that into our lives so we can release the need to keep setting intentions, because our internal environment is supporting what we want anyway.
Yeah. So that, ladies and gentlemen, is somebody that has put tremendous thought into what he calls his work and his model, right? Oftentimes you ask people about the titles of their, whatever it is, their program, their book and whatnot, and you don't get near the amount of depth and sophistication that you just gave me there. So there is proven to me that you have a lot to share and a powerful message. So thanks for doing that. And I like that piece about beyond intention, where, you know, maybe the starting point is you have to be kind of, you know, painfully intentional about disrupting the pattern, right? But you don't always want to do that, because that's not sustainable, right? If the pattern disruption and the intention behind that is painful each and every time, where you're going to kind of, you know, give up, unless you see the value in it, right? And keep pushing forward with a belief and faith that at some point in time, this won't be as complicated or painful, right? Anything that we're good at today, at one point in time, we were terrible at, right?
Exactly.
You know, everything, right? Walking. We were terrible walkers when we first started walking, right? Exactly. But, you know, we didn't tell ourselves, and our caregivers didn't tell ourselves, man, this walking thing, this isn't for you. Right?
That's one of the reasons why I love Matthew Syed's book, Bounce, where he kind of robs us of this illusion that the greats were born great. They weren't. They came from work. I love his example of Mozart. Everyone speaks about Mozart, the prodigy. Mm-hmm. But up until the age of about 15 or 16, his work was pretty crap, you know. But it's just because he did it as a child. And that's not to crap on what he did, but the true magic happened when he had 10 years of consistently putting that work in. Mm-hmm. Chess masters, they started young. So when we understand that, like you said, even walking, we started really, really horrible at it.
Yeah.
But consistently being able to take the pain of falling over, getting back up again, not listening if anyone did say we were no good at it, or looking at the evidence that would have been apparent at the time that it's pointless, but sticking with it, and then we're able to effectively do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm familiar with, you know, people breaking down Mozart and chess players, but through the book Peak. And so I don't know if you've read that book, but...
Is that Malcolm Gladwell?
No. That's Outliers for Malcolm Gladwell and The Tipping Point.
Yeah.
But I don't think Peak, I forgot the author of it. Put it in the show notes. But about, you know, back to Mozart, in this author's breakdown of Mozart the magic was actually Mozart's dad and not necessarily Mozart himself. Mm. In that if you look at Mozart trained, his father trained, I think it's on the order of a dozen master, you know, musicians. And so they're kind of linking that back to, you know, Mozart's dad more than Mozart himself and the genetics of Mozart and whatnot. So just kind of a curious thing. But again, without knowing kind of the backdrop and the context, you know, the typical average person just thinks, oh, Mozart, he was this, you know, gifted, genetically blessed, you know, musician. And yeah, I mean, obviously he had to have some of that, but he was also brought up in a household of musicians as well. So
the environment definitely supported it. I mean, even when you look at sports, I mean, people talk about Michael Jordan and how great he was. Of course, he was in his yard every day, day in, day out. Mm-hmm. Kobe Bryant, may you rest in peace. You know, the rookies saw that he was in the gym before them every day, you know, Ghost playing wheels and going over his moves and playing, because he was diligent to mastery. Mastery comes from those who practice mastery. And I think some of us that do get caught up in the story of, oh no, you know, look what that person did and I can't do that, when we actually see, but no, they practice mastery. I think it allows us to have some space to be human and to be gentle with ourselves and perhaps step into a desire to do some work to find, maybe it's not mastery, maybe it's just efficacy, or maybe it's just competence, but to do the work that's demanded of us in order to achieve that.
Yeah. So let's try this again with you. So dream with your eyes open. Break that down for us.
So first and foremost, there's so many levels here. So my work starts with Beyond Intention. Then it moves to something that I call Alchemic Life Creation, and then something I call Lucid Living. So all of these three levels are about choice, stepping beyond intention. Beyond intention, we're choosing our intentions. In Alchemic Life Creation, we're choosing our emotional state. And in Lucid Living, we're choosing our agreements. Now, to put that into layman's terms, when we talk about universal law, the law of vibration, scientifically, things resonate that resonate with each other are able to exist in the same environment, all right? So when you go to esoterics and spirituality, they talk about, oh, your vibe, and the law of attraction, which is a sort of bastardized version of that. The law of vibration, which is what really people that talk about the law of attraction is that we experience what we're vibrational match to, in short. So when we look at what vibe is, vibration, although, you know, gurus would be happily taking $1,000 from you to tell you something different, what it really comes down to is your emotional state. Our emotions is the first point of contact with our vibration. Vibration is just a frequency, and it's a measurable frequency. And all of our emotional states have a measurable frequency. So once we start to develop an ability to choose what emotional state we're in, what vibrational frequency we're at, we can start to have some semblance of agency in what experiences we have, because we can only make choices from our emotional state. Our environment is going to be affected by our emotional state. The relationships that we're able to have is going to be affected by emotional state. Our health is affected by emotional state. So we can start to be deliberate in what we experience in our life when we know how to be deliberate in what we're choosing as an emotional state. So we start with learning to set our intentions and to choose our intentions. Then we apply that power of choice to our emotional state. So we're no longer setting intentions. Now we're choosing to hold a set of emotions that directly correlates to experiences that we want to have. Once we elevate beyond that, we're looking at agreements. So agreements really is this whole idea that our belief systems are filtering out what we can and can't even witness in our world, right? If I don't believe it's possible, then my reticular activating system is literally going to shut down and stop me being able to witness it. I'm not going to be able to even see the job opportunity, let alone see what I have to do, or see my capacity to do what needs to be done in order to take that opportunity. You don't see that you're in a bad relationship. You don't see that there's a good relationship. These are all agreements that are happening with us at a mental level. And I believe that also extends into the spiritual level as well. These spiritual agreements that we have. When we start to look at hologram theory and start looking at this idea that everything's energy and we're witnessing expressions of energy responding to our expectation. Well, that expectation is happening against the backdrop of our agreement. And when we start to pull that idea apart, what we can and start overlapping it with the idea of lucid dreaming. Lucid dreaming is an ability to move through your dreams and to choose what happens in your dreams and be unbound by the rules of three-dimensional reality, because we're in a dream state and those rules just don't exist. We have a different set of agreements. So at its deepest level, dream with your eyes open is saying, take the power of lucid dreaming, apply it to our world, and select a group of agreements that supports infinite possibility, that supports abundance, that supports happiness and good health and love. And taking that to the nth degree, as your beliefs allow it, will allow you to have a more fuller life experience.
Wow. Wow. So let me see. And I honestly just listened to one of Dr. Joe Dispenza's books just past weekend. So I'm with you in terms of laying down the talk about vibe and reticular activator. And I'm going to clench my you know, perineum and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so you read Becoming Supernatural then?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Was able to follow that. And, you know, I might be a smart guy myself, but let me kind of put this back. So dreaming with your eyes open, you know, people talk about living your dreams, live out your wildest dream. But if your only concept of dreaming is when you're asleep and or not conscious, right? Then dreaming with your eyes open is taking that experience of, you know, your wildest imagination and foisting that into the here and now in the conscious, dreaming with your eyes open. So am I close on that?
You are. And yeah. Like I said, with everything that I do, there are different levels of depth to it. Obviously, I've gone into the deeper level of it. But I mean, I wrote a book called The Dreamer's Manifesto, which breaks down at an entry level what Dream With Your Eyes Open means. It's a very short book. It's about 12,000 words. I'm actually, as soon as quarantine's over, I'm going to be recording an audiobook for that.
Nice.
But at that level, what we're talking about is, like I said, the idea of everyone having something that they're here to do, not purpose, but what I call the dream, which is, like I said, that thread in the tapestry. Mm-hmm. And once we understand that thread in the tapestry, which is what innately comes through us as an unfiltered desire, unfiltered calling, not purpose, but that something deeper than purpose, and understanding what that is, and understanding that if we set up our agreements, if we set up our emotional state and we set up our choices, then we are free to express that. And if we do express that, then life can become a beautiful adventure. Mm-hmm. So an entry level, that's what we're talking about.
True.
And then the deeper sort of down the rabbit hole you go, we can start to talk about hologram theory and all that sort of thing as well.
Right. So not purpose. Let me take a guess at that. So not purpose, because purpose oftentimes implies an economy and then comes with it limitations.
And I would say that the idea of purpose, and one of the things I'm kind of outspoken about a few things, and one of the things I'm outspoken about is the nonsensity of waiting for a purpose in order to start living life. Mm-hmm. So many people are missing the beauty of this adventure because they're caught up, I don't know what my purpose is. And blah, blah, blah. Right. But I talk about, I think I've got a video on my YouTube channel even about this, the idea of finding purpose in the now, or micro-shifting into a life of purpose, and understanding that in a universe that's been demonstrated to be infinite, how can there be one thing that I'm here to do? Then I've just constricted infinite possibility. There can be one thing that I'm called to do. There could be one thing that's optimal for me to do in the now. In the next moment, that can completely shift. If I'm operating at a different vibe, or if I come into new information, or so for example, some trauma comes in, or I have a different experience, then my calibration as a human having this experience changes. And therefore, it's highly unlikely that I'm going to continue to operate in a state that directly relates to this one thing that I'm to do. So for me, purpose is something that exists in the now, and it's something that can continue to transcend and grow. I felt in my own life things I've been innately called to do. But I think there's something underneath that that feeds it and manifests itself through different callings or different purposes from time to time. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
So are you willing to try that out on me?
Let's go.
All right. So, because I'm with you, and I was listening to somebody else talk about, you know, changing purpose. You know, like, you know, what was your purpose when you were 26? You know, hopefully has changed now that you're, you know, 36, right? You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I'm with you on that. But when I was trying to kind of step back, when I was approaching 20 years into my career, and I was trying to make sense of it, or trying to find a golden thread that would connect the various things that I was doing, you know, in kind of my slogan for the upgraded life, or when I'm coaching people, is to help them, you know, realize and reach their potential. Cause I think so many people walk around, number one, not being aware of their potential. And if you're not aware of it, then you're not going to reach it. Right. And so I saw that in the work that I was doing with incarcerated youth, and seeing just masses of young people coming in with unrealized and unreached potential. You know, I saw it within myself. I saw it in, you know, the role that I have as a husband and father, you know, and then being a sports coach. So that was kind of my golden thread, in leading my own teams. Right. So that, I mean, I would say that that's my purpose, or that's my calling, is to help people, realize and reach their potential. So how would you break that down for me, given your lens?
Do you know what I do? I just invite people to take a moment and to pause and ask yourself this one two-part question. What feels good and does no harm? Mm-hmm. And that's it. And if I move through life asking myself what feels good and does no harm, mm-hmm. Now, desire is such a powerful thing. When unfiltered and called through the heart, some people call it communicating at a soul level. Some people will say, you know, allowing spirit to speak to you or hearing the voice of God, whatever it is, that untainted, still small voice from time to time that speaks as to what we're really burning to do. I believe that's our calling being spoken. Now, that can express itself in different ways. I don't know how much you go into the whole thing of souls and soul contracts and past lives and all that sort of thing, but I personally don't subscribe to the idea that there's some, that we have a soul agreement that we have to stick to that knows all things. Because if we follow that idea, people say that the soul comes to have an experience to learn lessons. Well, how can something learn a lesson and be omnipotent enough to know definitively what's right for me and what's not? If I'm here to learn a lesson, that means on this experience, I'm invited to contribute to whatever knowledge I've learned before in order to expand the soul experience. So if we leave that out of the box for a second and just say, me as a human here and now, what feels good and does no harm? What desire speaking through me that adds more life is expansive and not contractive and taking away from others? What's more pure than that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and if I'm living life in a consecutive thing of experiences that are answering that question, then how can I actually be doing anything wrong? I can't. I have a beautiful experience. I'm going to have more life. I'm going to have more joy. But it starts with being able to just ask myself what feels good and does no harm. And that's what I would invite you to do.
Sure. And, you know, a thought that I had when you were saying that is whose ultimate definition of that matters the most? Meaning, you know, what if I were to answer that, you know, what came to my mind when he said that what feels good and does no harm is what automatically popped in my head was caring for other people. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking, well, maybe my definition of caring somebody else would mm-hmm. define as harm. So mm-hmm. what do I do with that?
Well, here's the thing. At the end of the day, who's living your experience?
Mm. Me.
Right. It's one of those, you know, one of those philosophical quandaries that we see showing up in life, this whole idea of, you know, morality. So, for example, I'll give you a very simple example. In California, if I sell a kilo of weed, I've got the licenses or whatever to do that. I'm a businessman. Back home in England, if I do that, I'm a criminal. Mm-hmm. So we've got context, we've got positioning, we've got the societal agreements I'm subscribed to based on where I am. But really it comes down to me. There are some people that are in California that still find themselves morally abhorrent, the exchange of money for drugs, right? Mm-hmm. And there are some who will break the law in England saying that they're not breaking any moral agreements and they don't really subscribe to that idea. Mm-hmm. But what it comes down to is the person and whether or not they're prepared to accept the consequences mm-hmm. of the choice that they make against mm-hmm. the backdrop of that.
Yep.
So spanking a child. I was brought up in a household where spanking was a very good way to keep me and my brothers and sisters disciplined. Some people don't do spanking. Some people would say, you know, that's abuse. And some people, the line that crosses that constitutes abuse and discipline is going to be different. So again, it comes down to the societal agreements. Me being honest and in integrity with myself and making that choice against the backdrop of what's happening. And whether or not I'm prepared to accept the consequences of that. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, that's what I would say. Yeah, absolutely. And I had that same thought about, you know, if you're living according to your values, your personally defined values, and then sometimes you make choices that other people, you know, are going to think differently about, but you make those choices according to your values and accepting, you know, the whatever, you know, like the consequences that come for that. Again, consequences, you know, again, coming from the technical side, from psychology, you know, consequence automatically in our society, pop psychology gives a negative, you know, frame to it, but consequence is just the outcome of the choice and decision is the outcome. So it can be positive or negative as far as that goes. Okay. This is fun so far. Daniel, what is an emotion?
So one of my first teachers, spiritualist called Montu Tart, said that emotions are energy in motion. So emotions are the energy that we're experiencing at a vibrational level that starts to express itself through our body, changing chemicals and hormones, a change in behavior. And that's what emotions are. Feelings precede emotions because we feel something. And depending on the choice that we make about that feeling, we can experience an emotion or we can be in a space of neutrality. We can make choices and be led by it or not.
Awesome. So I am one of the, I think we're, and maybe just because I have, just because maybe because I haven't, you know, asked the question enough, but I don't find a lot of people that make a meaningful distinction between feelings and emotions. So, I mean, you use the word quite a bit. So that's why I threw it at you. And then you went right there and you distinguished between feelings and emotions. So I'm one of those, I'm in that same camp that I believe that there's a difference between feelings and emotions. And so that's why I was celebrating, you know, if I ever turned this into
I think emotion is something in action. I think when there's a shift that happens in our experience, that's when emotion, you know, we switch into emotion. I can have a feeling and not have any emotional response to that feeling. Right. Or I could have an emotional response to it. And then I anchor it in my experience and then I can make choices about it. It can start to affect my chemistry and whatnot.
Absolutely. So, you know, the way I was taught and mentored is, you know, there's four primary feeling states, mad, sad, glad, and afraid. Those are the things that are kind of survivalistically hardwired into us as by nature of being humans and having, you know, human DNA. And then when we experience a feeling, we filter that through our belief systems, right, and our perceptions, and then we respond to that combination into what I would call emotions, right? So if you know, as a father, you come home and you see, you know, a broken glass and the contents of the glass over the floor, you might get angry about that, but then the emotional experience, it could be, or you're filtering that through, oh, those, you know, those darn kids up to mischief again, and they couldn't even clean up their mess, and then you get, you know, you take it out on the children, you get loud, or you punch, and that's the energy in motion, right?
Yeah.
Versus, you know, there's all kinds of explanations that could be possible in terms of how that broken glass got there and the contents everywhere, right? You know what I mean? So, so I'm thrilled. I mean, we could just, for me, we could end the show right there, right? And just chalk this up as a win, the difference of feelings and emotions. And I love the way you described it as emotions of being, you know, energy in motion. I really, is that a play on the word? Emotion?
I think it was. He tended to be a bit of a wordsmith. He was always, you know, he was one of those tell lies vision people. So I assume that's what happened with energy and motion.
And then, so why? I mean, I'm obviously, you know, to a significant degree who you are and what you're about. And, you know, not purpose, but calling. How did you get there? And what was your process?
I don't know if you're a Bible reading man or have ever been a Bible reading man, but the story of Jonah and the whale quite accurately describes my experience.
Yeah.
I
don't want to go to Nineveh.
No, I had no intention.
Don't make me go to Nineveh.
Not at all. So I had... There was a specific date. I can tell you it's the 13th of February, 2017. I was actually at a Joe Dispenza retreat.
Oh, nice.
And I had a very profound experience where, and it was actually the day after the event. What tends to happen in his events is the day after, because normally it's in a hotel somewhere and what have you, everyone does something. He's got something called a walking meditation. And you will know, you've read Becoming Supernatural. And then we do them in the mornings. And generally speaking, the day after the event, everyone goes out and does a walking meditation. Some people hang out for a few days because it's quite intense, the events, and have some decompressed time. And I was out having this, it was February, Santa Fe, New Mexico, ball bustingly freezing. I had hot pockets, 3-4 layers on. And it was really interesting. I was with my ex-girlfriend, and she wasn't really down with the Dr. Joe stuff and thought I was turning into a bit of a weirdo. So because she'd come to the event to kind of keep an eye on me to see why I was running off to America every couple of weeks to go do these events, she says, oh, you know, what's going on? So she came along. So my experience that week was quite, you know, I didn't get any time to kind of integrate. As soon as I got out through the door, she was there and blah, blah, blah. So this was the first time I'd actually had some real quiet time at the end of the event. And I'd really been expecting something big to happen at the event. And it wasn't really that big for me. But then there I was doing this walking meditation. And I just had this glimpse of what my life would be like if I stopped fighting and allowed myself to just go with my calling. If I trusted that I'd be okay, because my book, Stepping Beyond Intention, I've been trying to write it for about 10 years before it came out. I'd done about 5 different drafts. I even put one on the shelf the year before, and then I pulled it off the shelf. It was hilarious. But in that moment, as I was having this experience, I understood as well that everything that had happened up to me that point, the shame that had led me to want to take my own life and the experiences that followed that and the ups and the downs, and that, yes, infinite possibility means that any combination of experiences could have got me to a place where I could be of service, but it was that particular combination of experiences that led me to the point I was at there. And for the first time ever, I'd gone from having what I call justified gratitude. Oh yeah, okay, I'm grateful for that bit because it did this, and I'm grateful for that bit. It was a complete and utter loving, accepting gratitude of all of my experiences, even the ugly bits I kind of didn't look at before. Mm-hmm. And as I stood there in that, I cried, I was sobby, snot crying, which was awful because it was really cold and I couldn't even really take my hands out of my face. And I'm just so grateful. And in that moment, I just like, you know what? I'm not going to wait anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to wait until I put aside a bit of money in order to go out on my mission. I'm not going to wait until this came together and that came together. Mm-hmm. I was going to trust that everything was going to be okay. And I made the decision that day that I was going to leave a very successful consulting company that I built up from scratch. I was going to leave all of that. And I was just going to just see what happened. I was going to finish my book. I was going to start the podcast. I was going to just go out on the road and share Beyond Intention, because by then Beyond Intention had been touching people's lives, but I hadn't gone out to teach it to anyone in a wide space. And I let go of the excuses around the book, the fear around sharing it, and the vulnerability that called for. And I just dived in, and I've been diving in ever since.
Mm-hmm. So that experience very much could have been one of the case studies in the book Supernatural, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Very much. Uh-huh. Very much.
Yeah. So just for my own curiosity, do you buy into it? And I'm not saying that I don't, but I don't know that I've necessarily experienced it myself, but you know, through what Dr. Joe Dispenza talks about in terms of his meditation and kind of, and again, I'm going to butcher it, but you know, in the inner awakening process, the release of DMT, and that, you know, maybe being responsible for this kind of opening our whole being into, like you said, shifting from that justified gratitude to, you know, loving gratitude. I mean, what's your take on the release of DMT through some of his meditations and his processes and whatnot?
I mean, I've been doing Dr. Joe's work now for a few years. I've had the pleasure of getting to do tequila shots of him on a couple nice. Of occasions even.
Yeah.
He's a really, really cool guy. A human that operates at a really loving high level of service. He's doing great work in the world. I personally know friends of mine who had cancer and no longer have cancer without going down the traditional route of medicine, but just committing solely to inner work, including the support of Dr. Joe Dispenza's meditations. I had the honor of volunteering at an event just this January out in Dubai. And a couple of the team members had very pronounced medical conditions that were viscerally missing by the end of the experience. I mean, people that couldn't bend their legs and bend over. How much of it's placebo? How much of it is nocebo? He wrote a book called You Are the Placebo. At the end of the day, I think everything's a placebo or nocebo, and whatever gets you there, gets you there. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to the mystical experience, and it comes down to, you know, the whole DMT-driven outcomes that we have, one thing I love about Dr. Joe is that he's measured. He spent years before he kind of, I mean, now he's got like a million and something people followers on Instagram and everyone's like, Dr. Joe, Dr. Joe. But when I first got into it, you know, there were 500 of us at an event, maybe less. Now his 2000 seat event sell out in 15 minutes, right? Back then he had, you know, about the same number of followers on Instagram as I do now, right? And, but he spent time carefully measuring the results, doing those brain scans, seeing what's happening in the brain when people are having these mystical experiences. A dear friend of mine, Carla, she had a mystical experience at one event, I think about, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, and her eczema, she tried all sorts of medication. Her eczema disappeared. Eczema was there and eczema was no longer there. Immediately following one of these experiences. So there's irrefutable evidence that there's something going on. Does it work for everybody? Well, my model is that unless other things are being taken care of, then it's not going to happen. But I think in terms of having a tool that accesses that part of the inner game, I haven't seen anyone that's producing tools that are more effective than Dr. Joe, in all honesty. And I've been at this 20 years looking into this sort of thing. So.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's the kind of external way to do that as well, right? You know, and terms, you know, microdosing with, you know, psychedelics is something that, you know, I think 10, 15 years from now, maybe even sooner, it's going to be a household thing, you know?
Definitely.
You know, the research behind that is really hard to look past.
Definitely, I'd agree.
Yeah.
And then, I think Joe's been asked about this whole thing about that, and I'll be careful not to butcher it, but, you know, the body, the pharmacy of the body can produce just as much, if not more.
Right. And that's the whole argument for DMT is like, how can you make it illegal or ban it when it's something that's self-produced, right? You know? And so, I think that's kind of a interesting argument there. And, you know, kind of in the same, but different, you know, vein in terms of intervening with people, you know, my school of psychological theory is called intersubjective systems theory, and we talk about how, you know, basically, you know, and I wouldn't necessarily lump, you know, autism or Asperger's into this, because I think that obviously there is some neurological things that are there, but
yeah,
you know, our claim is that most things that manifest as a mental health system, even including things like tics and whatnot, but you know, the eczema example, really, we know that is nerve related, right? You know, in terms of the external information in that causes the scaly skin. But what we teach is, you know, disrupted development and the constant experience of malattunement, you know, in our environments, that's what is the driver of, you know, what we call mental illness or, you know, mental health symptoms. And that through the process of working with another person and truly experiencing attunement, albeit love, although in the sense of a counseling relationship, you can't really say that, right? that these symptoms can literally right in front of you just dissipate and go away for forevermore, right? Because, you know, and so I'm with you in terms of these kind of, you know, weekend or workshop experiences where people can, you know, be healed from all kinds of things, including on, you know, on my end of it, you know, severe and persistent mental illness. And so, yeah, I'm very intrigued, very interested, very much a open mind to that. And I mean, the ancients have been doing it for longer, way longer than, you know what I mean? And it's universal across, you know, ancient religion and text. So who are we with our science to kind of, you know what I mean?
We're just backing up what the ancients have been saying for so long.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
That's my thoughts on it anyway.
Nice. Well, I appreciate you going through that and letting me kind of pepper you with questions there.
Good one.
So, you know, one of the things that you do is you're a coach, right? You work with people. How do people find you if they want to be coached by you?
Interestingly enough, I don't do much one-to-one coaching anymore. I'm very selective in working with someone on a one-to-one basis. I tried hiking my prices and that didn't work. so I tend to only work with 4 or 5 people at a time mm-hmm. when it comes to one-to-one coaching. But then I do deep dive coaching weekends where I'll take 5 or 6 people. We'll go to somewhere really cool. Not so much at the moment. We've had to cancel about 5 because of COVID.
No.
But,
yeah.
We've been to Tuscany a couple of times and Malta. I do some down here in Cabo. Been to some really cool places. And we deep dive for a period of a weekend and we do some intervention work. I've got some hypnosis training and so on. And we do visualization work and we dig into the intentions. We look at what the belief systems are and we hack those. So that's in terms of people that wanting to work with me on a one, like in a in-person basis, it tends mm-hmm. to be the coaching weekends. Mm-hmm. And then from those, I kind of get to know someone enough sure. to see if we're going to do in-person. But the most common way that I'm working with people right now is through my Micro to Millions program. And Micro to Millions takes my idea of the flow funnel, you know, aligning our intentions, our emotional state, our belief systems and actions, specifically to give people the result of getting from wherever they are as a financial state to what I call the million 2.0, which is the amount of money that you associate cognitively with facilitating you having a more abundant life. And for everyone's different. And mm-hmm. it's really funny. When I first launched the program beginning of last year as a beta test, I was like, yep, yeah, we're going to be millionaires and blah, blah, blah. And it was all about making people millionaires. And then I realized that some people were really happy once they got to 6 figures mm-hmm. or, you know, just when they got out of debt or when they finally started being consistent or being able to pay their bills. Mm-hmm. Everyone was at a different place. And I understood at that point that not everybody wants to be a millionaire. They just want to have the freedom to live a life that expresses what they want.
Right.
And so, you know, we've just launched it recently now to the public again to take in new people. And yeah, we've called it Micro to Millions 2.0 because it's about what is your million 2.0? It could be getting to financial stability. And that's all that you really care about right now, rather than worrying about paying the bills or too much month at the end of your mm-hmm. money. Or maybe you do want to be financially free. You want to have a level of income that supports you not needing to work to bring income in. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you want some surplus. You want to be able to give back or, you know, do some charity yeah. work, support your family. So it's identifying where people want to get to on the entry and then giving them a specific model that we've got on the strategy side, specific tools on the mindset side. We do some NLP work, hypnotherapy work. We use the work, I don't know if you know the work of Lynn McTaggart. She's done about group intention setting. Mm-mm. She's really, really cool. Check out her work, The Power of Eight. It's really, really cool stuff. So we've done some group intention work in order to get to different levels of financial abundance and mental rehearsal. And I do group calls on that a couple of times a week. And that's the principal way that people end up
nice.
Working with me at the moment. And then from there, maybe they've got a deeper area with relationships or health and whatever. And we can address that on a coaching weekend. And then if they really want to invest in themselves, then I do have some one-to-one coaching.
Perfect. Yeah. And I love that model. And thanks for correcting me in terms of, you know, what you're doing and how you're doing it.
It's all good. It's all good.
You see, yeah. So my consistent question that I ask Daniel is to folks that are on this podcast is mindset as a concept, as a phrase, as a term. What does it mean to you? How do you define it? Does it have any relevance for you?
It's interesting. I saw the question in the pre-email mm-hmm. and I said, I'm not going to think about it until you ask me because mm-hmm. I really want to be in the moment with it. Mm-hmm. And as I sit with the idea of the word mindset, now what comes to me is the belief systems, the narratives, the stories that are happening within me at both a conscious and unconscious level mm-hmm. that frame the potential that I can tap into as a reality. So that's my limiting beliefs, my expanding beliefs, all of that that's happening in the mind. Mm-hmm. Which I believe to be the gatekeeper of experience and how that frames the reality that we're able to exist in.
Mm-hmm. Love that. I love that, you know, you talk about conscious and unconscious mindset. You know, I really appreciate that part of it. Does the mind exist as a physical structure? What is the mind?
For me, it's one of the questions. I actually had to write a paper on this when I was doing my degree. Is mind in, you know, great philosophical question. And for me, mind is an intangible realm. I mean, let's look at reality. If we take the spectrum of light, okay, the part that we actually experience with our physical senses is like this, and the rest of it's, you know, it's massive. I think that mind is one of those parts that exists outside of physical manifestation, and it's a level of density that we connect with through our being, but it's not manifested in three-dimensional reality. We don't connect with it with our senses, which is what I define 3D reality as. So I believe it's real, but not something that we experience three-dimensionally, but it's something that we can connect with, that we engage with, and that has a role to play in the reality that we end up experiencing.
Is that why some people, or maybe most people, find mindset work challenging? Is because we, you know, on average try to address it as a three-dimensional entity?
I would say that's probably a good shot at it. Yeah. I mean, if we're not engaged, I mean, look at the subconscious, you know this. The subconscious responds to imprints, images, senses. You can't talk logically to the unconscious mind. It just doesn't speak that language. Look at the emotions. You know, people try and force themselves, I'm going to feel happy, or I'm going to feel sad, or buckle up and get over it. That's not what that part of us responds to. Mm-hmm. I think the mind, again, it's a level of density that has a way of communicating with it. And if we're seeking to communicate with that part of ourselves in a language that doesn't speak, we're not going to get a result.
Right. Yeah. I think that's beautiful. What's your degree in?
I actually never finished my degree. Started and stopped twice. Yeah. So I started in international financial economics. I did a year of that. Then I set off, did something else. And then I went back and got about halfway through my second year. I did it like a few units, like a distance learning program in politics, philosophy, and economics. And I've actually committed to finishing the degree. So it's going to be around philosophy, and it's going to be philosophy driven now. And that's why I really feel in my happy place. The economic stuff, it was just so maths led and just doesn't really excite me as much. But definitely around thought and thinking, it's going to be philosophy
yeah, driven. Absolutely. Cool. And I encourage you and applaud you for finishing that sucker. Get it
Thank
done.
You. Yeah, I'm going to get it done.
So in terms of back to mindset again, what's something that somebody can do, you know, as soon as this podcast is done, to help, you know, improve or upgrade their mindset?
Whenever anyone asks me about that, I always invite them to take a look at the disruption exercise. Reason being is that, you know, I think it's Bruce Lipton that says like 95% of our time is spent in unconscious programs. And if we have any hope of disrupting on a consistent basis with intentions, then we need to first recognize and have a visual experience of just how much time we spend unconscious and running on programs. And so the disruption exercise is this: spend an hour challenging every unconscious impulse. Just an hour, and then extend it to half a day, and then spend a day just challenging those impulses. Not wetting yourself, but when you feel, I need to go to the restroom, just ask yourself, do I really need to go to the restroom? And it's just starting to enter into a dialogue with that part of ourselves and see what's going on. And you'll start to find that some of those times that you said you're hungry, you're not really hungry. It's just that your brain's used to feeding at that particular time. Mm-hmm. You don't even need to use the restroom yet. It's just you're a little bit depressed. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're not angry. You're just responding to something. And then you could start to get into a space of awareness, because we can't think about what we're thinking about and not be in a space of witnessing what we're thinking about, because we're no longer we're now observing, right? Mm-hmm. And that space of observation is a very, very, very powerful place to start stepping into having more agency and dominion over the choices that we're making, the emotional state that we're holding, the beliefs that we're listening to, the stories and narratives that are going on, and start choosing something different.
Mm-hmm. No, that's beautiful as well. Kind of, it's Derrida's hammer is the metaphor that came to my mind, where, you know, the carpenter that uses the hammer every single day in and day out, starts losing touch with the actual connection between the hammer and the nail, right? And so that you just take it for granted. This is what I do: hammer, nail. So this piece about challenging or questioning every impulse, I really like that.
And just want to add, without judgment, so not beating yourself up, without shame, without guilt for what's coming up.
It's curiosity, right?
Curiosity, yeah. Play for curiosity.
Yeah, I'm going to do that.
Let me know how you get on with that. I'd love to hear you get on with that.
Daniel, we're about done. for this. Again, thank you. But for folks that are looking for you out there, where can they find you?
Dreamwithdan.com. Dreamwithdan.com is my website.
Yeah.
I'm Dreamer CEO on Instagram and Twitter. I'm quite active on those. But the website, I would say, is it's a universal resource. My podcast, you can find there, my books and everything. So dreamwithdan.com, I would say.
Dreamwithdan.com is that's a great title for a website. Daniel, thank you so much for being here and being with me and being with my audience. I know that you delivered a lot for people to consider, a lot to chew on. And again, that you know, mindset, practical exercise of challenge all your impulses. It's remarkable. It's probably one of the best tips that I've gotten so far on the show. So hats off to you for that. Any parting words from you?
I just want to say thank you so much for this opportunity to speak. This has been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to listening back to it as well and to continue to follow your work. I really appreciate you. Salute you for stepping up and doing something to add to the world. And thank you for your service.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right. Take care.
Thank you.
I don't know what else to say because Daniel said it all. That was just a unbelievable jam-packed interview. It is something that we could have gone on for hours and hours and hours. I don't believe in coincidence. Somehow, some way, this past weekend, just a few days ago, as I was setting out to do a full day's of yard work, looking through my audiobook queue, trying to pick a book that would keep my attention through the work that I was about to do, and there it was. Supernatural, Dr. Joe Dispenza. And I listened to the entire thing and I chewed on it and I mulled on it and I re-listened to chapters and I re-listened to the case vignettes. I just can't help but think that that was the universe telling me, helping me be prepared for this conversation with Daniel Manguera. Daniel's concept for mindset is just beautiful. There's just really no other phrase for it. And his mindset upgrade tip of challenging me, challenging you to incrementally step back and analyze our own impulses, hunger, pain, responding to the people in our environments, at home, at work, at leisure, at play, and just really captivating the thought, taking every thought captive and asking yourself, is this really what I need to think? Is this really what I need to feel? Is this really how I need to respond to this situation? Daniel told us to try it for an hour, then try it for a couple hours, try it for a half a day, try it for a full day. And it's a skill that you can get better and better at. And trust me, I'm going to apply that to my own self. I'm going to try it. I'm going to give it an hour. I'm going to give it a couple hours. I'm going to give it a half a day. I'll give it a full day. Maybe I'll blog about it so you can see how that plays out for me. As you heard Daniel say, he is a coach. He does group retreat type workshop coaching. And if that's for you, I would encourage you to reach out to him. And the focus on helping you generate and build the wealth that you need, I believe, is a very powerful thing for people to be bold, to have courage, and jump into. I know that when I work with my coaching clients on the front end, there's a lot of concern. There's a lot of angst. There's a lot of fear that the process, I'm using air quotes, the process won't work. But really what that's about is you as the individual, you as the potential client, really not being sold that you are worth the investment. And I'm here to tell you, you are worth the investment. You are worthy of realizing and reaching your potential. So if Daniel spoke to you in this episode, reach out to him. If what I have said in this podcast and in other podcasts is speaking to you, then what I offer is a free strategy call where you and I get on a phone call, get on a Zoom call, and I walk you through what your needs are, what your goals are, what your current hurdles are. And if that is something that I believe that I can help you with, then we'll take the next step from there. So if working with Daniel is something that you're interested in, if working with me is something that you're interested in, you have to get over to my website. Over at my website, I will have in the show notes for this episode all the ways that you can connect with Daniel. And my website is also going to give you several opportunities for working with me. My website is www.nicksotelo.com/TUL podcast, the Upgraded Life Podcast. When you find your way over to the podcast specific page on my website, at the very top, you're going to see three buttons. One button is going to say schedule a strategy call. Just click on it, put in your name and email. It will send you to my calendar so that you can book a time specifically with me. That is a free 30-minute session with me. The next button is going to say CBD product info. I'm a big believer in CBD. I use Nature's Ultra CBD every single day, and I would love to share with you how this product can make a difference in your life. Nature's Ultra CBD comes out of Colorado. It is the first certified organic CBD farm in the United States. I personally use mint essential oil infused CBD in my coffee every morning. And when I have aches and pains, I love the CBD muscle rub. So to find out more about Nature's Ultra CBD, again, click the button, give me your name and your email address, and I'll send you a quick and easy presentation all on Nature's Ultra CBD. The third button that you're going to find at the top of my podcast page is titled Income Boost, Boost Your Income. Again, click on that button, give me your name and email address. I will send you a 20-minute presentation. 20 minutes of your time is all I ask. In that 20 minutes, I'm going to show you how you can add an additional stream of income so that you can actually have the financial funds to do the things that you want to do in your life, for yourself, for your family, for your friends. It's purely just information and you're just taking a look. When you're done with the presentation, you're just going to tell me, yes, that's for me. No, it's not for me. Or maybe. And I'll honor whatever response that you give me. Finally, I just want to thank you so much for taking your valuable time plugging into my podcast. Your listenership means the world to me. My final request is to ask you to go over to Apple Podcasts, leave me a 5-star review, but only do so if you truly mean it. If you're getting something out of this podcast, if you like what I have to say, if you like what my guests have to say, then let me know. Give me some feedback. And the best way for you to do that is to go over to Apple Podcasts, leave me a 5-star review. This is Dr. Nick Sotelo. This is the Upgraded Life Podcast. And I'm urging you to take whatever the next step is for you to realize and reach your potential.